Take two. We're live, pal. I'm Double G here with the returning Andrew Zarian. Andrew, did Las Vegas did a number on us. You're back.
Oh, my God. You know, I should not have started having drinking this early.
There we go.
You know, I was not expecting all the connection issues.
I have water, just so everyone
knows. Cheers. It's later in the day for me. It's four o'clock here.
Like I told you, I do a baseball podcast on the Giants, and every show we have a drink, and we try and have a different drink every show, and then we kind of talk about it. But this is different. For me, this is like 1 p.m. It's in the middle of the day. I got to go back to work.
It's in the middle of the day. Listen,
you've already been working hard.
I start at like 6 a.m. I'm done with the day.
Yeah, there you go. So you deserve deserved.
I did Wrestling Observer Live on Sunday. I took a couple days off after Vegas. This is our first show back.
Yes. So I recorded with Kyle last week, and we talked about all the stuff that happened with MJF and just all of those things, and then now you're back. But I have one more question for you before we get into the wrestling stuff. How do you hold the neck of your corona there? Do you hold it like Vin Diesel in Fast and Furious?
Like this?
It's a Vin Diesel move right there.
You know, I am from... Well, it got too excited, the beer. It got too excited.
So yeah, that was good for the video stream. At least the podcasters won't know that your beer exploded onto your lap. Okay, so let's actually get into what we are going to talk about today, because, man, you reported this first on Mat Men a couple weeks ago, right? This whole Stephanie McMahon stuff.
No, I think we did. I did it on Friday. I spoke about it on Friday a couple weeks ago, and then we spoke about it.
Right.
With Dave and everybody.
Yeah, with Dave and Brian, we talked about it on the special edition, weekend edition of We're Live Pal before the pay-per-view. And now the story has exploded a little bit more. Do you have any update on your end as far as what's going on here?
Yeah, let me just say, I never rag on anybody's reporting, right? But that Business Insider piece is so convolutedly written. And I don't know if it comes from... did you read it? Did you read that Business Insider piece?
No, because wasn't it like behind a paywall or something?
Yes, I actually had to sign up for Business Insider to read it, because I was very curious on what other... You know, how they were reading it. And, you know, I read the article, and it was kind of all over the place. I don't think it did a good job at actually representing the story. There were a couple of inaccuracies in it. I can't remember what it was, but when I read it, I was like, that's not accurate. You know, the person's probably not a pro wrestling writer, knows nothing about pro wrestling. I'm not going to take a knock at the person that wrote it. You know, listen, everybody, you get these assignments, you get these jobs, you do it. But I thought it was a terribly written piece on a huge developing story that is really going to play a part in WWE's future. But I you know, we spoke about it with Dave. I gave pretty much all the details on there. Obviously, we'll retouch on this. But I got to tell you, if I own a company, like, what would have to happen that I tell my, you know... I'm not saying that the PR department did this, right? Or whoever. Mm-hmm. But Business Insider didn't. That person did not, you know, find a scoop.
Right.
And it also did not come from the person that told me what happened.
Right.
This is two separate.
So you think they were fed the piece from someone at WWE?
I cannot imagine that this person that really knows nothing about pro wrestling happened to stumble on this, you know, story. Or maybe, you know, or maybe they heard the story based on what we reported, and they contacted WWE and got a, you know, got the answer from PR. That's also possible. But could you imagine, like, you have kids, right? Yeah. The only thing that it doesn't stand right with me is that it was like a Vince initiative to do this. Like, I could never bury my child, you know, to the media.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at his relationship with Shane. Is it that surprising?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, Shane. I don't know. WWE. I mean, I don't think I ever saw an article saying that Shane is incompetent at his job, and it came from WWE directly. You know, like,
yeah.
Obviously, we heard what happened at Royal Rumble, but that was a little. That was like the first time I saw something negative like that come about the McMahons. But I was just. I'm still shocked. Like, I would never put it out there like that. You could have let. And here's where the strategy is, right? You could have let. You could have let her just said, you know, I'm taking time off, which she is. And that's 100% accurate, right? She wanted to take time off and she is taking time off. That is not a pretend piece of the story. But the piece where this is coming from Vince and this is a Vince initiative, I've never seen that before. I even to the point like when I reported this, Garrett, like I almost felt like I was being worked in reporting this. You know right. what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I even, like, I asked a couple people and nobody else had heard this, but because of the person that told me, I have no reason to doubt what they're saying.
Right, right.
And then now it's coming out that this is accurate, but what happened, you know, to go from that initial press release or statement that, you know, I'm taking time off to spend time with the family, whatever, to, you know, oh, well, she was kind of terrible at her job. And I'm filling in the words. It's not my opinion. I don't know how good or how bad she was at her job other than what was said to me. But, you know, it's a very bizarre take. It's a very bizarre positioning for the company. I would have said that this is less Vince and more the new guard at WWE, the new corporate guard at WWE, rather than the old guard. I want to get your opinion on this. Like, When I was told, I called you first, right? Yes. I think I called you immediately, and I was like, all right, I gotta tell you what's going on here, because you know you at least have some knowledge on this, you know, with Dave and everything. But what did you think of this? Like, why this strategy? Why not let her just take time off and deal with it later?
Yeah, I thought. My initial thought was, okay, this is a new WWE. This is not the same family-owned business where Stephanie and Shane are kind of propped up in this way, and they're going to be allowed to fail, and they're going to be able to fall forward. Because that's what it was, you know, throughout the 2000s, right? It was Stephanie in charge of creative. Well, why is she in charge of creative? What did she do, or what kind of schooling does she have that says she understands this other than growing up in the wrestling family that she did? And so it was definitely a step in a different direction. It tells me there's way more of a corporate influence, probably a Nick Khan influence, and that's the guy that you should be following anyway.
They're friends,
right?
Like that, and they're friends. Steph and Hunter and Nick, they're friends.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think that Dave said that they kind of helped bring him into the company or something.
Yeah.
Their relationship. 100%. So that whole thing, something changed. And it has to be from a corporate mentality. But the being negative towards Stephanie out the door is something way different. And that's the thing that's kind of hard to understand, is the why of that. So when you told me about this, and I was talking to Dave a little bit about it, because I wanted to see if he had heard anything, and you know, he hadn't really heard much about it, but his initial thing, and I'm not breaking any confidence here because this is what he's said consistently. Yeah. He said, I just don't understand why they would say bad things about her out the door, because if you possibly ever did that before, you were going to get fired. And when you told me what was going on, the idea that I got was, oh, they're not scared of this information getting out. Like, there's a strategy here. And so that's kind of the unanswerable question for me. And I mean, I don't know if, you know, if there's been a possible relationship thing with Vince and his daughter. I don't know if she was thinking of going this way and you know, Vince and people close to Vince are like, nope, we got to go this way. Now, you know, I had heard stuff about, you know, sort of Kevin Dunn and maybe, you know, if Stephanie and Triple H had ever fully taken over, like maybe that they weren't the biggest fans of him. And same with, you know, the Bruce Pritchards of the world and Johnny Aces and those guys who have been like longtime Vince right-hand men to the point of where they get the blame for stuff that maybe that they didn't necessarily do just to protect Vince. And that's, you know, and I've heard stories about that, but you know, that is just the thing that just kind of boggles my mind is how does Stephanie go from completely untouchable to let's just blast her on the way out. Like what changed there?
I mean, a couple of years ago, I mean, 2018, obviously the succession plan was Vince, you know, leaving it to Hunter and Steph. That was always kind of how it was positioned. Everybody's answer was poor Shane. But, you know, the other piece of this is when you put out an article like that, right? Like when you put out a story essentially saying that she was not competent and there was no confidence in her job, they positioned it in a very interesting way where you didn't hear anything about her actual position as branding and marketing. You only heard that I don't know if they're reporting based on my report, if they got other information from WWE, because I haven't heard anything beyond the initial discussion other than a few couple things here and there. But it was said in a way that like, well, you know, when Michelle Wilson left, Stephanie took over the sales and the UFC thing and, you know, like the investors. It wasn't like Stephanie's doing terrible at everything. It was, to me, it was like, oh, so this thing that she ended up having to do because you released somebody, you fired somebody and couldn't find the proper person. So now you're burying her when it wasn't even her sole job. I just, that to me was the most bizarre part of it. On top of obviously you're telling me that a McMahon was terrible at her job in pro wrestling, which I cannot imagine them doing that. I'm not saying there's more, but my own personal belief is that something had to have happened here. Right. You don't do that to your family. I don't care how tough the whole story. Well, he's tough on his kids. He's tougher on his kids than everybody else. Yeah. But how tough was he? Stephanie McMahon got a great corporate gig with no corporate experience. Shane grew up in that company. Stephanie grew up in that company. Not that they didn't deserve it. I truly believe that they deserve to be where they were. It's the family legacy. It's the business. And they did, you know, they worked hard. They're very hardworking people. But it's not in my nature, and maybe that's why I don't understand it, that I cannot, I choose not to believe that this was a Vince thing.
Because you're a decent human being, that's why.
I try to be.
Like, this industry sometimes, right, can be, pretty tough with people who may not make decisions in the same way that you and I would make decisions. Okay, so the other thing that's so funny about this is, the people who Vince has brought back to work for him, like the Jeff Jarrett, you know, is now running the live events thing.
And Jeff Jarrett has a job in WWE and Stephanie doesn't.
Right. Jeff Jarrett held Vince up for, you know, $1 million or whatever it was to lose a match because his contract had expired. And, you know, supposedly that made him persona non grata until he wasn't anymore, until he was okay to come back. And now he's running live events. It's just like that whole stuff is really wonky. The idea though, so here's what's inconsistent about the situation, right? Because Dave is continuing to report that he doesn't believe that Vince was behind Stephanie leaving. But Dave also says everything that happens at WWE is the result of Vince, right? So he believes, I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but maybe the scenario could possibly be that she saw the writing on the wall and she exited stage left before they could do something, or before Vince had to make that decision. Maybe she made that decision for him because she knew what was coming. That is definitely
possible.
And
he got upset? I mean, that is possible. He got upset that she wants to take time off. You know, maybe it was a thing like that where, but something is so fishy here to me.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly, I feel like this is a very, there's a lot of holes in this. And I don't know, man. I mean, it just could be like business as usual. Everybody's equal. It's a corporate position. I mean, do you? I don't know. I'm not going to say what I'm going to say, but I don't.
Because you don't want your cell phone to start ringing. That's why.
Well, yeah, kind of. But yeah, pretty much. But I other companies don't do this.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I can't, I'm trying to come find a good example that, like, it's like a family-owned business that went really public and, you know, the father is very adamant on burying the child that worked there after, you know, 20 some odd years. I don't know. I think it's very strange. I feel bad for Steph. If it is a negative, you know, I feel bad for her. If it's a positive, good, great on her. She has all that time with her family and it's great. But the big story piece here is Hunter. Hunter's still there.
Yeah. She still owns 2.5% or whatever it is of that company. So
like $160 million. And she will be back. There's nothing. As of a couple of weeks ago before this thing blew up. But
I mean, we'll see. Would you want to come back if that's how they handled your exit?
I don't know. They're McMahons. They're all wonky, you know?
Yeah. There's probably, I mean, you're probably right. So, okay. So here's a different thing, which is the part of her job that I thought she was really good at. And obviously, I don't know anything about the branding stuff and the partnerships and the sponsorships and all the stuff that they're supposedly under goal on. But the thing that she was really good at was as the spokesperson of the company, right? Because Vince is not great at that anymore. He cannot get up in front of people and be charming and, you know, really win that conversation. And I thought she did a pretty good job at it. Who now becomes the mouthpiece? Is it Nick? Nick is very charming as well. I've heard him on podcasts. He understands that whole game. So maybe he starts doing that. But I thought it was really good for them to have a woman in power being that spokesperson, because I just thought she came off very well. Now, she didn't really answer questions necessarily in a great way, but I just thought she was good in that role. And for the future, I thought she would have been continually good at that role. But why not just make her, you know, change her role where she can still do that and take that other stuff away from her? And maybe that's what they did. And she was just like, no, I don't want that. So, you know, we don't know. There could have been tons of different options before anything happened. But yeah, just I'm sure this is an evolving story. Yeah. And at some
who said WWE can't come up with good storylines?
This is better than, you know, Edge getting kicked out of the Judgment Day. Way better, right?
Way better. Way better.
Way better.
I'll probably have some more info by Thursday for Matt Men. But as of right now, this is a, you know, somebody else over there, not in like an executive or corporate position, but they were adamant to use the term old guard and the new guard to me. Mm-hmm. So you could tell that is something that sits with people within that company, that there is a transition happening. And that there is a whole new approach that's corporate wise. I don't know about TV and stuff, right? But the corporate stuff, this is going to be a very different company in the next 5 years. And some of the goals that I've heard that they have, it's always like the Vince McMahon big picture idea, like some of the ideas that get thrown at me. But this is the first time that I think like they could execute something like this because of the people in power.
Right. All right, let's change gears a little bit here. Let's talk about the Hell in a Cell show. And really, we're probably just mostly going to talk about Cody. When you heard over the weekend that he had torn his pec, did you imagine he was going to have the match that he did, cut the promo that he did on Monday, and be the biggest, most giant babyface in all of wrestling? And then have to go take 6 months off. Like, what's good?
I know.
Like, this is a crazy thing that just happened.
Well, the unpredictability about pro wrestling is the thing that makes it so interesting. So I don't know who reported it first, but I think David mentioned initially that it was a gym incident. But first of all, did you see how big Cody's gotten?
He's big, man. He
put on some size since coming in. I mean, he looks great.
I think he put on that there was a time in AEW where he was off TV for a little bit. And when he came back, I was like, OK, he's doing less cutting and more power stuff because he was just bulkier. Yeah. And, you know, I think he's probably still doing that stuff right now. And, you know, unfortunately, supposedly hurt himself from the weightlifting. But yeah, I mean, he you know, it's. Here's, I mean, you are still in, you know, you are not yet 40, but what I realized is lifting when you get older, your power doesn't really leave you until you, you know, until you get much older or until you get hurt. Because I was able to lift and keep getting stronger and stronger and stronger up until my early 40s. So, you know, it's easier to do that than it is to really lean out as you get older. So maybe that's also part of it. You know, he's now in his mid 30s or whatever. So putting on bulk is probably easier for him, and being super slim and trim is probably a lot harder. So maybe he's just like, let's just get bigger, man.
Yeah, I, you know, and also he's around a lot bigger guys too. I think that kind of plays a part in it too. But he, I mean, he was looking fantastic. He was on the run of his life. So unfortunate, I feel for him for sure. But I, when I heard that he tore his pec, I was like, oh, there's no way he's competing. Like, what is he going to do? And then I actually thought it would be like, you know, he comes in, he tries to, he gets beat down, and they pin him. You know, but they did not. They had a match, and yes. I mean. Was it the best Hell in a Cell? No, but was it? Is it going to be one of the most memorable ones now? 100%.
It was super compelling. It was super compelling.
They made him. I mean, he was already a big time babyface there, and he was getting. I mean, he was going to consistently grow from there because I there's something special about this run for a lot of people. Now, when he comes back, that pop is going to be like Hunter returning in 2002 with the Garden. If it's not, then they have a big problem.
So I actually thought I still like the WrestleMania match the best out of all of them. But man, when has there been a series of matches this strong between two folks just back to back to back like they did? Like all three matches are, you know, 4-star plus matches.
Yeah. No. And they ran how many? 17 matches on the house show loop? Something like that. Something absurd. So, yes, I mean, these guys, they were married, you know, they were married on the road and they were working heavy. They really mesh great together. A lot of people didn't expect that. Now he's out at least, I mean, 4 to 6 months, right? John Cena returned in 4 months, but he's unnaturally human. Hunter came in 5, right? He returned in 5 months. After
giant. His. Bigger than ever.
He's a giant.
He came back like so much more jacked than he left. That was the amazing part of it.
Well, I think Cody's going to come back and he's going to be in remarkable shape. But, you know, this is a, you know, now what do you do? This was his run, right? The next 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, whatever it is, was his moment. And now you need to reposition everything. This kind of hurts the storyline. But, you know, for the first time in a long time, WWE has a tremendous babyface on their hands.
Okay, but what do they do with him not there? Because he's not there. And now they don't have a tremendous baby face on their hands. They have a big hole in not only in main eventers, but in baby faces as well. Like who's there? Because, you know, I did this thing. I was asking people in my the Fight Game Media Facebook group. I was like, if you had the opportunity to make somebody like a top baby face, like maybe there's a mid-card baby face who's doing well, like who could you just, you know, turn the key on and go, okay, we're going to do this. And, you know, some answers were like, oh, Madcap, and not, you know, Madcap is really cool and he's not overexposed. So if you really wanted to, go for it.
Okay. Edge. Orton.
Okay. But
Riddle.
Okay.
Strap
so
it to Riddle right now.
Okay. So I think Orton is what's eventually going to happen, right? He's going to return. He's probably returning sooner than he was because they now need him. Edge, he just went heel, cut his hair, wearing suits, getting into this character, and it was was it 2 months? Did they do this? I don't know how long it was. But,
not even.
Not even
Mania
2 months, right?
Now?
So it's almost like, I don't know if this is the result of the Cody thing or if this was always the plan. Because now, to me, Judgment Day is back to mid-card city. Edge was the one that was keeping it as a main event program. So I kind of feel bad for those folks. But Riddle is a great one, except the way that they use him is every time they need a babyface to lose, it's him. Can they change that mentality? And can they actually make him a main eventer? Or is he going to go into this feud with Roman and he's just going to lose to the Usos every time on the way up to this match? Like they really need to change their mentality in the way that they book him if they do want him to be that guy.
Hey, and then Cena, right? Cena's possibly back.
how many matches is this guy going to do? One, probably, right?
SummerSlam, right? SummerSlam, maybe Cardiff. Tickets, you do SummerSlam, you do Cardiff, and then maybe two, maybe three. But obviously, you know what I would do, man? I would be like, you know what? World title match for the first time, long time on Raw or SmackDown. Put it on Cena. See what happens. Why not? Oh, it's all up in the air anyway, right? Like, I'm serious. And it's so crazy that we're talking about this in 2022. Cena's been gone for a little bit.
Yep.
They just got that baby face that they've wanted, you know, that all-American baby face, and it went away. They just, not their fault. Drew's another one they got, right? Drew's another baby face. No one on the level of Cody right now, but I actually think their babyface positioning is not bad. If they do compelling stories and everything, I think they could get some of these guys into that top position until he comes back. But man, what a terrible time for this to happen.
Okay, so I'm sort of being facetious, but I'm not being facetious at the same time. Is there anybody in AEW whose contract is coming up anytime soon? Because WWE should back up the trucks for that person, whoever that is, as long as they're somewhat pushed.
Like a top guy?
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
Because, you know, that's the move, right? Like that's part of why Cody was so over, because he's the first person to jump back. And that's a blueprint plan now. And that's what they need to figure out, is there anybody else who we can bring over? Because that will create, at least for a few months, that will make that person, and then, you know, they can sort of figure it out.
I don't think anybody on the top level, like that top world title position, but like I don't know, I don't know any of the contracts offhand, but like a guy like Andrade, right? I could see him going back. I could see him going back there. I could see a guy like Miro going back there. That they could utilize
the best,
in a way.
Man, Miro the best man.
Miro the best man. Cutting those. Yeah. Can you imagine him cutting those promos in WWE? Vince would lose his mind. What the hell is he saying?
Because, you know, based off of Raw, which I thought was an okay show, it was pretty entertaining. But man, for long term booking, I didn't get anything out of that show. Like, it was a show to just, if I'm just like, kind of, you know, halfway paying attention, there's some good wrestling, you see some stars, the Cody thing was awesome, Cody and Seth thing was awesome in the top, but like if you look at it from like a long-term perspective, like, okay, what did I learn about this journey to Money in the Bank? Nothing. There was nothing happened, right? And they don't have that long, you know, to get there. It's not like they have 2 months. So, and I'm sure some of this is they had to redo some stuff because, you know, we had talked about it. Was Cody going to win the briefcase? That would have been cool if he did. And if now they have to change it, okay, you give them a week. They got to rejigger some things. So, I don't know. I just don't have a lot of faith with them right now. And this is kind of the dance that happens is post WrestleMania. Sometimes, you know, they gear everything towards WrestleMania and all the good ideas, and now they're left with what's left over. But yeah, the product outside of Cody and to some extent Roman, and we know Roman's not going to be there every week, outside of those two guys and no Brock right now, you know, on the women's side, Becky's as stale as she's ever been.
Can we talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, why is she losing to Dana Brooke?
Why did she lose?
Maybe she's taking time off. I mean, maybe that's part of her deal. Yeah, I don't know. It's so weird.
Just so weird. By the way, chat room's correct. Miro signed an extension until 2026. So no time soon.
Oh, okay.
For Miro. Yeah. So, I mean, I was just throwing names that were there that could go back. I don't know. I listen. And then we got that whole Sasha and Naomi situation still going on.
Yeah. Still hasn't been resolved.
That's not resolved, and it's getting very messy.
What do you think happens?
That's going to get very messy. I think if Naomi's contract was ending in 2 months anyway, right? Sasha had time on hers. Sasha had time on hers. I think if Sasha's smart, she should hire a really good attorney She probably has a really good attorney that's probably working on this now. And, you know, you'll force who got, to get you out of the contract.
Who got Snoop out of the Murder Was the Case, man? Hire that person.
Oh, yeah. Hire that lawyer. I think I know who the lawyer was, but I don't want to be wrong. Okay.
Do you know Snoop owns Death Row?
Snoop now owns it?
He bought Death Row. I don't know how much, I don't know what that actually means, but I guess some of his masters, but yeah, he bought Death Row. He now owns Death Row.
It was Johnny Cochran. Cochran, okay. Represented. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to be wrong here.
There's got to be some relatives of Johnny.
It has to be a relative. Come in. No, I think Sasha, from what I heard, she has a really good attorney, but you know, I think it's going to go into that and they'll fight it for like months or a year and there'll be some sort of agreement because you can't hold people up. Sasha had re-upped in 2019 when she left that summer. So I don't know if a three-year deal.
Three-year deal, 5-year deal?
22. Maybe she was approaching... Yeah, maybe she was approaching the end too. I don't know the exact thing, but she has a good attorney. You could get out of there because an employer can't prevent you from making money.
Right, right.
Those non-competes are a little flaky. They can't hold your contract forever.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, if she's contemplating like, you know, I have these years, I have this time left. Just do the thing. I'll have good wrestling matches. I'll make sure I look great. And then, you know, let the thing expire. Or like you said, you get into this tug of war with WWE and Jerry McDivitt. And as long as Vince is not on the stand, because did you see the XFL thing that came out the other day?
No.
The deposition with Vince and
I didn't
the
see
lawyer
it, no.
What happened? Asking him. So Dave and Brian did a reading of this on the Wrestling Observer Radio on Sunday night, I believe. And basically, the guy was asking Vince, you know, you have this clause in these XFL contracts that's like this, you know, you can't have a felony on your record. Like, you know, he's like, yeah, because we think the quality of the individual, it matters just as much as their ability. And so basically this person started asking Vince questions about Vince's own record. Yeah. And it comes out, and he's like, look, you know, you couldn't even play for your own football company. And Vince is like, you're right. Like, it was so ridiculous. Jerry McDivitt's trying to get them to change the questioning. He's like, oh, you can't. And they're like, nope, answer the questions, Vince.
Oh, I need to see this.
I'll forward it to you. I have it in email. I'll forward it to you because I got.
Oh, yeah, I
got
to see
I got
this.
Forwarded this over the weekend after I saw. Right. So I get out of. Top Gun 2, which is a fantastic theater experience. If you're a fan of the first movie, go see Top Gun 2. Amazing, Maverick. And I get out of the movie, and I just get this email, and I'm reading this email, and I'm just laughing. I'm just cracking up because it reads like a comedy bit. And yeah, Dave and Brian did it on Sunday.
Oh, did they really? Oh, is that what they did? I missed that part. I got to check that part out. I totally missed it.
Yes. It was pretty funny, but it actually reads funnier because then you can do the Vince voice in your head because they didn't do any voices, right? You can do the Vince voice in your head, and I thought it read funnier. But
I wanted to hear Dave do the Vince voice. That's what
Brian was
I
Vince.
Wanted to hear.
Brian was okay. Vince.
All right.
Yeah.
even better.
all right. So. I guess we should move on to AEW because on Friday, now I don't know how early you were seeing this, but you know there was the story that Punk was going to make this announcement, and I don't remember. It may have been Sean. Sean may have had something up there as far as what the worry was, and all of a sudden, Dave and I are recording Wrestling Observer Radio on Friday, and. You know, we know that there's this announcement coming and we're kind of thinking that he's hurt, but no one really knows. So we do the show. And after the show is over, then we both watch Rampage or at least that segment. And we realize that Punk is off. And so then we went back and we recorded what was going on, because if you watched Rampage live, it was very confusing what the situation was. Punk.
So I did not see it live. So I wasn't as confused. Okay. I saw it. Okay. I saw it like 25 minutes delayed.
Okay. So it was unclear to me what actually the story was, other than that Punk was legitimately hurt. But he said he was going to give up the belt, and then he wasn't going to give up the belt. And then Jericho said he was giving up the belt, and Jericho was like, oh, I got that wrong. And so finally, what we realize is there's going to be an interim champion. And Wednesday at the top of Dynamite, once Dynamite starts, we're getting a battle royal. Now, we also saw what was reported is that Bryan Danielson is possibly injured or he's just off. Based on what happened in Vegas, I was like worried about COVID-19 because there was a lot of that going on in Vegas. For the both of us that you know, we didn't catch it, but you know, so for what I guess he's not going to be in that match.
That's why. I had a family emergency, so I had to leave a little early. But
the sweet party,
I didn't make it to the pay-per-view. Yeah.
The sweet party. I was at the sweet party. Was fun, but you know, we had windows open and stuff. But there's a lot of people in that room.
So let me tell you, the on Wednesday when he was wrestling on Wednesday,
yes,
I was texting Rich, and Rich goes to me. He's like, dude, I think he hurt himself. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, when he jumped off the ramp, I think he might have hurt himself.
Oh, you're talking about Punk.
Yeah, Punk on Wednesday.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So, and I was like, I was like, I don't think so. I think he might be like working it a little, you know, in the mat. Yeah. He's like, no. When he was coming down the ramp after he jumped into the crowd, I was like, I hope that's not the case because so many people have told him not to do that, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Like if you go online, people are like, oh, why is he doing that? He shouldn't be doing that. But now, like, you know, he hurt himself. So I don't think he'll ever jump into that crowd again. You know, he broke his foot.
After that match was over, I was like, man, that is maybe the most off I've really seen CM Punk in a match. Because they messed up a bunch of stuff in that match.
I almost tweeted maybe he should have taken the night off, you know, because that was a hard-hitting match that he had with Hangman.
Sure.
But he was wobbly. There was something going on.
Yeah. And so what did you think, though, when we found out what the rules, what the plans were? Battle Royal on Wednesday, winner faces Moxley. Moxley got maneuvered into the number one contender spot. And now, you know, because of a few different things going on, who we thought was going to be one of the hotter guys, Wardlow's kind of been, I don't know, it feels like he's been pushed a little bit to the back burner. Obviously, MJF, there's a big focus on MJF based on what happened.
The promo of
while we were in Vegas. Now Moxley's number one contender. I assume Wardlow's in this battle royal, but if Wardlow wins the battle royal, he's got to beat Moxley for this spot in the interim title.
Or you come up with a new program for him, right? You could put him in a different program. Something could happen. I'm reserving my opinion on what they do with Wardlow. I'm going to say 1 week, you know, last week it was a disaster of a show for them in a good way and a bad way. I thought it was a fantastic show. I loved Dynamite last week. I, that's one of my top Dynamites. I think the energy was good. It was rapid. It was fast paced. But I think for Wardlow, I think we need to give it another week or two and see where they put him in. I don't think he should be in a world title position right now. Move him into the TNT title.
Okay, but he's got to be in this battle royal, right? If you have all, because Adam Cole is also on the shelf. So I don't know. We'll see about Samoa Joe. I know he's injured in storyline, but you know, you need to have your top people. You know, it can't be like everyone from Dark Order and you know, a few top guys. It's got to be like, you know, the majority of your top wrestlers, like at least the people who were in that Owen tournament, right? Because, you know, we had the Owen tournament and a lot of the top people have to be in it. Eddie Kingston's got to be in it. Jericho's got to be in it unless Jericho figures out a way to get out of it. I'm interested to see what happens at Wardlow because I don't think he can win, because if he wins, then he has to win the title based on kind of what happened. And if he's in the battle royal, he's got to lose in a way that saves face a little bit. So maybe something happens, like you're saying, his next program, and he gets eliminated in like a unfair way, in a heel way. But yeah, I'm so interested in the booking because, you know, I asked Tony Khan this in an interview before. I said, you know, things can happen injuries can happen. People could get sick. This was, I think this was actually during COVID-19 when people were popping left and right. So I said, do you have a plan B when you're booking this stuff? And he's like, nope, I trust my instincts that I can kind of turn, you know. And so I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. You don't want to get, you know, maybe you will second guess yourself if all of a sudden your plan B looks better than your plan A. So now he had to turn very quickly. Whatever the story was, which we know, at least for the main title, was going to be Punk versus Tanahashi. Now that's all out the window. So he's got two matches on Dynamite. The Mox match is going to be the main event. Whoever wins that Battle Royal to face Mox. And then on Dominion this weekend, you have Tanahashi and Goto. Now, putting Goto in that match makes that match very predictable. Goto's not going to win that match. He's not going to.
But why do they do that match? Isn't it like an unnecessary match to have since they already announced Tanahashi? Like, why would they? Because Punk's injured. Why would they take it away from him?
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. And to me, this is a New Japan concession going like, all of our card is booked, man. Like, we can't all of a sudden make a match that doesn't, you know, that someone else is involved in. So I think that was a concession. Goto's an ultimate gatekeeper. Him and Tanahashi will have a good match. In Japan, people will respect that match. Maybe in the US, you know, some fans are like, it'll be good, but it doesn't really have the same oomph like if you know, somebody else was in it. But so then winner on Wednesday faced Tanahashi at Forbidden Door to become the interim champion. Would you belt Tanahashi knowing that Punk Tanahashi was where they were going, or would you belt Moxley? And this is us saying Moxley's going to win. I don't know if he's going to win. But if that looked to possibly be maybe a match for down the line with Punk and Mox, then you can just do that match as the unifying the interim titles.
So there's a couple things here, right? One, you know, by that MJF promo and CM Punk coming to chase him out of the building, I thought maybe they were going there. And I think that would have been such a strong show for Chicago for Punk to lose and MJF wins the title in Chicago. My God, you know, what a heat moment. But if they're not going in that direction, was it going to be him and Moxley anyway in Chicago? I mean, first of all, I think that is a really cool match to see, right?
Yeah.
CM Punk and John Moxley. I'm not against it. But I think the way that they position John Moxley in this wasn't necessarily done to help John Moxley. I think he should have been in this in a different way. I think what they could have done was had the four top competitors, like the four top, you know, whatever in the rankings for the title, face off in a four-way. You know, Wardlow could be protected in there. What was John Moxley? Do you remember what the ranking was?
Well,
someone in the chat room could do it. One of our producers, MG Geek, in our chat, he could probably find this. But
I thought the original rankings were that Wardlow was number one contender, but then it
Wardlow was number
one. Mox, and then Tony Khan explained, you know, his decision behind it.
So Moxley was fourth, Wardlow was one. Who was two and three? Whoever, it doesn't matter, right? Even if you had whatever the four in there, you could have Moxley still win and Wardlow's protected. You know, you could do something like that where Wardlow didn't really lose and he's fine and he goes into a feud with whoever cost him. Mox was ranked third behind Cole and Wardlow. So Adam Cole, John Moxley, Wardlow, and who else? Who did we say?
Hangman.
I forgot. Hangman? Yeah, maybe Hangman. So, I mean, you could do it. It's possible. You could have had them battle that way, and then everybody else could have been in that battle royal. So, you at the end of the night, you could have figured out, okay, who are the two top people?
Yeah. You know what I like?
Face off at the end, and you go off Dynamite.
I actually like that. I like that idea, but the way that I would have done it is I would have did all the former champs and have all the former champs.
That's another great idea.
But great the thing idea. is if Omega was healthy, that would have been the idea. Is you get the four former champs and you break it down that way. But you could still do Jericho, Moxley, and Hangman. And maybe if you wanted to throw Wardlow in that match, he doesn't have to win. He just doesn't
because he's a number one contender. Yeah,
right. And so that could be another way.
Isn't that such a great heel GM storyline? Wardlow gets screwed out of his title because the GM, if this was WWE, that would have been the story. Vince comes out and goes, you know what, Wardlow, you are the number one contender, but you got to get through these guys first, you know, and then they come out.
Yeah, he's going to put them number one in the world.
It's a different promotion. Yeah, it's a very different promotion. I'm not against Moxley being a number one contender at all, but
there
I
is
think
something to
maybe,
this, what you said, though. I like what you said about that, which it doesn't put Moxley into the best scenario in this situation. But I think what I think why Moxley is here is because he's just so trusted, right? Like you know that Jon Moxley is respected, beloved, the fans. Sure. You put him in that position and the fans buy it every time because he is made. He's a made guy. And so I don't know if, you know, I don't know if it's a trust thing or whatever, but, you know, you put other people in that role and maybe they can't handle the pressure of what is going to be expected. And if you do play out Moxley and Tanahashi as the main event of Forbidden Door, there's a built-in storyline there because those guys were kind of doing that before, and we haven't had that match yet. So that stuff makes sense to me. I'm just not sure about the way that they're getting there was the best way.
I think, but it, again, you know, this is the consequence of booking on the fly, right?
Right, right. 100%.
You know, that's the consequence. Another good suggestion in chat, and I also wanted to bring up one other thing, because I tweeted this, and I meant it in the good and the bad, right? Last week's Dynamite felt like I was watching a remastered version of WCW 97.
Mm-hmm.
It was
very much.
It felt, you know, Regal was there and Tony Schiavone and Jericho, and you have all the, you know, the all those guys still in the mix, and it just felt like such a rapid fire show, chaotic. But there were a couple issues, like the so Jon Moxley's involved in that Blood and Guts match, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Kingston cost them that match on the pay per view,
right? Right.
And there was nothing there. That went nowhere. Him and Danielson are not on good terms, right? That's there. Jericho and Danielson are in a thing because he tapped them out. You also now have Jericho in that hair versus hair match that was announced in the weirdest way right before and while the Blood and Guts match is announced.
Yeah.
It was a lot of information in such a short period of time. And I kind of like that chaotic nature, because I grew up on that. You know, that's what Raw was. It was like 80,000 things happening. You know, Jim Ross is losing his mind, and all of a sudden there's like a backstage segment where like someone's getting ketchup on their face. You know, it was all over. It was such an insane show, which I enjoyed Dynamite. I'm not comparing it to the terribleness of Raw, Attitude Era Raw, but I am comparing it to like the cool stuff that you see on TV. The unpredictableness and like it kind of kept me on my toes watching it, which I enjoyed, but it was a lot of weird stuff going on, right? Like it's storyline and connections that are a little too much, maybe.
I haven't talked to anybody about this, but my thought on that is this is such a ratings game for them.
Oh yeah,
they just don't want people to change the channel, man. Like,
listen,
if you're constantly, this
is the plan.
If you're throwing stuff, people are less likely to change the channel. And then you see it with the minute by minute stuff. The second they go to commercial, boom, how many fans do they lose? Right. So it's I think that's what it is, and I get it. TV is who they, you know, that's the big thing for them is TV and that TV money. So I completely understand booking these matches for TV for Dynamite, you know, to some extent for Rampage too, though, you know, when those matches are taped and then I read the results, I'm like, is Rampage really an A show? It doesn't seem like it. Though last week's Rampage was definitely an A show, you know, for 1 hour
great
show.
Opener.
But yeah, so, you know, we are in for, you know, whatever the Tony Khan booking on the fly is, you know, we'll see that on Wednesday, and then we'll pretty much be set after Saturday for Dominion, and we'll know what the main event is for Forbidden Door. So that'll be interesting. And Forbidden Door is in like 3 weeks.
Forbidden Door is in 3 weeks. I wanted to go to that show, but I don't think it's going to be possible.
No.
I don't think it's going to be possible.
I'm now, you know, hopefully when summer comes, there will be less worries about COVID. Hopefully it goes down. But man, I think I'm scarred after Vegas and coming out of there scot-free because, you know, I took I think I took a test every day from Tuesday to Sunday to Saturday just to make sure, because I had somewhere to go on Saturday where I was going to see family for the first time in a while. And, you know, a lot of my older relatives and stuff. So I was like, I'm going to make sure that I'm, you know, okay. But man, that was a lot of fun. But also at the same time, I was like, oh my gosh, that was kind of scary.
Yeah, I had a good time, man, until I didn't, until I had to come back home.
Yeah, that was tough.
Everything's fine. Nothing. My dad wasn't
feeling well, so I'll leave it at that. So I came back.
He's doing better.
Way better, yeah. He's causing trouble when he picks up my kids at school, so that makes
better. So, well, we'll get out of here because we started a little bit early, or I'm sorry, a little bit late because of technical difficulties, and you know we like to get out of here on time.
Isn't Lance on? Are we running over on time? And Lance is
well. I mean, if we're a second over, I'll definitely get a DM.
We're getting the high sign. Yeah, Lance is quick with the high sign to wrap it up.
Yeah. But before we go, just want to say hanging out with you was awesome. We had a great time. So much so
great time,
that at the Q&A, you know, this is sort of Vegas, and Vegas time is much different than any other normal time in the world. At the Q&A, you had already gotten the news about Pops, and we both looked at each other, and we were like, it's 10 a.m., there's a bar. Let's get a drink at 10 a.m. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the
ultimate Andrew Zarian experience. It's not a Zarian experience unless we're getting, you know, I think we got like Crown Royal at 10 a.m.
Yeah, Crown Royal on the rocks. Wasn't even like rocks. A mimosa or anything.
No, but did you hear that guy, our driver, tell me to put my Rolex in my pocket?
Oh, yeah. We're in a bad part of Vegas. Be careful.
He looked at me. He's like, is that a real watch? I'm like, yeah. He goes, put it in your pocket. You do not want to walk around with that. I was like, all right, whatever. And I'm like, I'm from New York. He's like, oh no, it doesn't matter. That's what he said to me.
The silver nugget.
He's like, it's really bad. Of town. Silver nugget. Yeah.
All right. Next week, I'm not going to be on this show because I actually have to go back into work for the first time in 2 years to physically go back into the office. So either we go dark, or maybe Andrew can find someone to do show with, but I will be back the following week. So, that'll be it from here. For Andrew, I am a Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.